From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us in this scorching Sacramento Valley summer. It's summer. That's what it is. Some of us grew up in this valley without air conditioning. So it was just, that's just the way it was. It was summer. You found a place, you found a neighbor that had a swimming pool, and or you ran through the sprinklers, but that's the way it is. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad that Anthony Taw is joining us. Anthony is the regional coordinator for youth and young adult ministry here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Anthony, good to see you as always.
Good to see you too, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're both maskless.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and it's good.
Yeah,
it's good to see your whole face.
My wife says I look better with a mask on.
Hey, there's some people who might like that.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we were growing up, we had the Lone Ranger, but he had a mask.
Oh, cover the eyes. Yeah.
So it was always mysterious. It
reminds me of Superman and just wearing the glasses to hide his identity.
Yeah. So talk about your job for a minute.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I primarily work with youth ministers and young adult ministers, and of course our pastors, to just try to really support them to really be able to do what they got to do with ministry to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and let's be real, they're the ones out there working with the actual sheep of the flock, right? And so the whole thing is, I want to give them resources, support, and just ideas on how and what they could do in order to reach more, reach beyond just the walls of the parish, but really evangelize the unchurched and the nuns.
So do you get out to a lot of parishes?
I try to. It's great when I'm invited, so I know who would like to have us.
Yeah.
But there's so many parishes with so many needs that it's kind of hard to fit everyone in. But if there's someone that has an idea or would like us to visit, someone from the office is more than willing to go out there and just visit them.
So have you been in youth ministry for a long time?
Yeah. Before I came here, I was a youth minister for about 15 years at various parishes for the Oakland Diocese.
In Oakland Diocese. Yeah. Did you grow up in the Oakland Diocese?
I did. I did. Grew up in Hayward, California.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I was born in Oregon, but moved to the Bay Area when I was four.
I was born in Oregon. Where were you born?
Portland.
I was born in Portland.
Oh, small world.
Emmanuel Hospital.
Oh, I have no clue which hospital I was born at. Barely remember anything, but hey.
You moved to California at four. We moved to Berkeley when I was four.
Oh.
So we were neighbors.
Yeah. Hey, that's awesome.
I'm a little bit older than you are, but.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
So. Yeah. Well, a fellow Oregonian, glad to meet you. Are you a duck or a beaver? Either or,
I guess.
Were your folks native Oregonians?
No, actually, my parents came from Vietnam. Yeah,
really?
they had to escape after the Vietnam War.
Was it during the late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, right after the fall.
Wow.
It took them a while, but
the fall of Saigon.
Yep.
Were they living in Saigon?
Yeah. My parents were from the north, and then just being Catholic and everything, they, you know, the communists, they had to be pushed and flee.
Yeah,
and so after the fall and everything. It took my parents three tries to get to the U.S.
How did they get here?
Well, they escaped by boat, primarily. So there was three tries. The third try, they were finally successful, being picked up by a Japanese fishing boat manned by Filipinos.
Wow.
And they were taken to Japan. And then through there, they were able to get sponsored to come to the U.S.
Yeah. And they settled in Oregon.
They actually settled in the Midwest. Uh-huh. I forget exactly which state. Mm-hmm. But then a parish sponsored them. It was actually them and my sister.
And they were Catholic at the time.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. My parents were raised Catholic.
Right. Yeah. There's a strong Catholic presence in Vietnam, of course.
Yeah. And it's great, but there's still some discrimination there.
Is there?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's accepted, but here and there could be like some punishments or like someone being or like a priest being arrested or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm not fully into the news there.
Have you been to Vietnam?
I have not yet. I want to visit, but I
have your parents been back?
Yes, my mom visited twice already, and my dad was back at least once.
And still relatives there?
Yes, we do have a couple relatives there, and then some of my siblings have been able to go back.
Right. Of course, we have the Vietnamese Martyrs Church here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Yeah, in South Sac, right?
Florin.
It's a great community.
I attended a great event there a few years ago. It was actually a fundraiser for Cristo Rey High School.
Oh, really?
But they had the big hall and were very generous with their facilities.
Definitely. No, it's a lovely community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I'm biased. So
yes, of course. Well, that's great. That's great. That's very, very interesting. Yeah. So, have you faced any discrimination? We hear in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Hayward, and so
Hayward's a Portuguese town.
Parts of it.
Yeah.
Parts of it. And then you have some parts are mainly Latino and some Asian. And so it's a very diverse community. And so, yes, you would get some discrimination or like some ignorant views and comments about who you are or where you're from. But I guess it was a norm. And so I didn't really take heed to it.
Yeah.
But thinking about it, there were some misunderstandings and misgivings about race.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're further along now than we were then, but still, that I know there's some instances.
I think we are. It seems like for some reason there have been an uptick in the last couple of years.
I think an uptick of at least awareness, because with just technology, people are being able to notice and share their experiences. But I know of friends and some relatives who have been so to speak, attacked because of their race, or at least discriminated. So it's nothing really new. It's been there, but at least now it's brought to light a little bit more.
So did you go to Hayward State or Cal State East Bay? What is it, Cal? No.
I started to attend it when it was still Cal State Hayward.
Cal State Hayward.
But I finished when it was Cal State East Bay.
Okay.
Yeah, so I get to choose what's on my diploma, I guess.
I was on the tennis team at UC Davis.
Oh, really?
And they were one of our big rivals, and it's up on the hill.
Yes.
And the real problem was the view was so great. You couldn't concentrate on the match.
Mm-hmm.
The Hayward guys were used to the view.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, look at that great view out there.
Because you could see, I believe, at least two of the bridges from there.
Yes, yeah.
And it's beautiful, especially on a fall day when it's actually clear and warm.
When it's actually clear.
Yeah.
When you don't have the fog rolling in. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah. I didn't. Oh, wow.
Neat campus.
I had no clue you played tennis.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think I didn't.
Oh, well, I mean, hey, how long have you been playing tennis?
Well, I started late high school when I found out that I couldn't play any other sports.
Oh, okay. Well, I did swimming in track, cross country.
Really?
Yeah.
For Hayward?
No, I only did it. I swam most of my life and then did it through high school. And then I just wasn't good enough to continue, so I did it.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
No, it is okay. Yeah. It's funny because that was a... Even though tennis is an individual sport, my teammates from UC Davis, lifelong friends.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Just lifelong friends.
That's awesome.
You know, I think it's something about you rooting for each other. Mm-hmm. You do have doubles in tennis, but it's an individual sport, you know, and you think, well, you don't care what anybody else does. Yeah, you do. You drive in those 10-passenger vans with them to all these different places, you know, like Hayward.
Yeah. No, I get it, because with swimming, that's also an individual sport, unless you're on relays.
Yeah.
But you can build lifelong relationships.
Yeah.
And I know I'm still in connection with at least four or five people that were on the team.
Yeah.
It's just like for swim meets and track meets, you're there for a whole day for events.
For a whole, that's right.
Yeah, you start at like 7 in the morning, and you don't leave until like 8 or 9 p.m. Whew.
Two of my daughters were on the track team in high school. The track, and especially if you were a driver to an away meet, you couldn't leave after your kid's event.
You're waiting for everyone else to finish.
And man, they would sometimes 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Yep.
We're raising the bar of the pole vault. Or the high jump. They get three more attempts.
Mm-hmm.
They would go on and on and on.
And I remember going in a bus, and we'd just be waiting in the bus for the last person to finish. It was an awesome experience, but oh man, so tiring.
Yeah,
but worthwhile. Definitely worthwhile.
So, what brought you to Sacramento?
This job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because of the pandemic with layoffs and everything, I was let go, and no faults of the parish. But then I saw this opening, took a shot, and hey, here I am.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's been good so far. It's been good.
So we got a lot coming up.
We do.
You've got a lot on your plate.
We do. Well, I'm sharing with the rest of the office, and so I'm not alone, but we do have a good amount of things happening.
Yeah. So let's talk about the World Youth Day.
Oh, that's a good one to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happening next year.
Next year.
Late July, early August of 2023. Yeah.
Speaking of Portuguese,
it's
in Portugal.
Yep, in Lisbon.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's going to be awesome. I haven't been to World Youth Day, so it'll be my first time.
How's everybody going to go to Fatima?
Oh, we are opening up some time for them to go to. Actually, we do have.
Oh, it's not part of the tour.
No, it's not. But then we do all. We, as part of our group, we are going to take people to Santiago, Compostela, just to spend a day there to relax, see the town, mm-hmm. see the cathedral, and then we'll come back to Lisbon. And then I believe either Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going to have time to, if people want, go to Fatima. Boy. It's not too far. It's like a two-hour bus
Something
ride.
Like that, yeah.
And so it's simple and easy. And just go there for like half a day, do our thing, and then come back. And then come and experience the rest of World Youth Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Pope Francis will be there.
Mm-hmm. And then Bishop Soto will probably be there.
Bishop Soto doesn't miss. Yeah, absolutely doesn't miss.
We're planning to have a mass and dinner with him.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, and so that'll be a great experience for everyone to come.
Yeah, I think it was in Manila. I think it was John Paul, where they had 6 million people at mass for World Youth Day.
Oh wow, no, that's beautiful.
6 million.
Yeah, wasn't there like some statement saying that because of World Youth Day, like the island like shrunk, like a foot or something,
sunk a foot down into the ocean.
Oh man, that would be something.
Yeah, I remember. I haven't been, but it was when it was in Rio. And that was Pope Francis, and he said something like, I know you're all too busy to read the whole Bible and all that. He says, just read Matthew 25 and do it.
Mm.
You know, I thought it was good advice.
No, that's beautiful advice. Because it just kind of paints the way for it.
Have you been to a World Youth Day before?
No, I have not. I have not.
So you will go to this one?
Yep. I'll be going to this one. It'll be my first experience.
Oh, that's great.
And so I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited because from what I know, Lisbon's it's a nice coastal city.
Yeah.
So beautiful weather. I'm expecting.
We should talk to Bishop Cotta, I don't believe he's a native, but his parents or maybe grandparents came from Portugal.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's something.
Now the former auxiliary here and now the Bishop of Stockton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm only guessing that he would go to this, but I don't know. He may be busy has a busy job.
Hopefully, I know it would be great to see as many U.S. bishops over there as we can. Now, this past weekend, just a couple days ago from today, we went to Chicago for the Alive in Christ Journey Together event.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that was led by the UCCB for intercultural ministries and everything, and just being able to hear and work with various cultures on how we could really support them in our faith.
What was it called again?
Alive in Christ, Journeying Together.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we had four young adults go as well, and they had a good experience. And
so what did you learn there?
There was a lot, a whole lot. But mainly the whole idea is that beyond just cultures, there's a lot of generational things that need to be discussed and focused in on. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing is getting these conversations going and then action plans in the diocese, just so we get this conversation within each parish going. And
right.
That way there could be more growth and healing and action at each parish.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff. I mean, we had a multitude of cultures represented, and then a lot of them being able to share their experience, and then everyone coming together to try to figure out what is a great way for us to speak to the young adults of these cultures, mm-hmm. to really uplift mm-hmm. them and empower them to really help really be active in the church today.
You've got a tough job.
It's
we
enjoyable.
We think of youth ministry as basketball and pizza.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, or just
the old CYO.
Board games and music, yeah.
But they demand more, and they've got a lot of distractions.
Mm-hmm,
and not necessarily distractions. There are a lot of wonderful opportunities mm-hmm, out there too, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of noise in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people are saying a lot of different things to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to see all the challenges they have.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not just those. I mean, the challenges are there and they'll always be there. It's more about how do we really resource them and prepare them to face those challenges.
Right.
I mean, I hear from a lot of just adults say, oh, kids will be kids. But I think that's demeaning them because they could take a whole lot more and they're ready for it. I mean, you just mentioned it that they're longing for more.
Right.
But I would say with that, that means that they're almost ready for it. So why not give them the chance and empower them to really face those challenges
mm-hmm.
and just encourage them to do it? Yeah, be there when they fall, but then it's okay if they fall here and there.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's the one thing my wife and I always talk about is we hope to give our kids that real solid base. Maybe they are going to trip and fall. Maybe they're going to slip off the rail. But if you give them that base, I don't know how many times I've talked to people that say, well, there was a period of time there where I kind of fell away, but they come back for some reason. Mm-hmm. God pulls them back.
Yeah.
But giving them that at a young age, and it's real important that they know that mom and dad believe what they're saying.
Yeah.
If you say, well, that's the body and blood of Christ. Yeah. Okay. But we're not going to go to mass today. We're going to watch the 49er game. Mm-hmm. You know, then they realize you're not buying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't buy it, they realize this is just some ritual you're going through here.
Yep, or just some loop to jump through, or just some check mark, right?
Exactly. Jeff, yeah. You got to get baptized, and then we're going to give First Communion, then confirmation, then you're on your own, you know?
Yeah, parents need to give more credit to themselves. They might not think their kids are listening to them, but the kids are absorbing everything.
Absolutely they are.
Yeah. And it's really funny because I know when I was youth minister, some parents are like, they listen to you more than me. I'm like, no, they don't. I'm just supplemental, and I might be like a soundboard, but when it comes down to it, like, they follow the parents' example.
Yeah, they
ultimately.
Really do.
Yeah.
They really do. We're all role models, not only to our own kids, but I've said many times, you know, you walk into a 7-Eleven and maybe you're a new father and you've got an infant with you, and there's a group of teenagers back by the Slurpee machine, and if you're like, oh, this kid's just a drag, or if you're acting like this kid is the most special thing in your life, they notice that.
Yeah,
they'll
make an impact.
Yeah.
Maybe small, but it could be huge.
Exactly.
All right? And then you never know what someone's going through, and seeing how you react to what you have, it could exemplify exactly what they're feeling or seeing.
Exactly. So what else are we talking about other than World Youth Day? Well, first off, if the people go to the diocesan website to learn about how to sign up for World Youth Day.
Yeah, www.scd.org/World Youth Day 2023.
Okay.
And you can contact either Alex Barraza or myself at ata@scd.org, and we are more than happy to assist you.
And that's TA.
Yep, correct.
That's do people mispronounce that name?
Every so often. I know for my first name, it's Anthony rather than Anthony.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Anthony is so common. And then mine's just without the H. Yeah. But then Ta, that's simple. Just two letters,
T-A. It's too easy.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. Yeah. I love it.
Is that your parents' given name from Vietnam?
Yeah, my dad's.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know a lot of my relatives, when they came over from Germany or Ireland, you know, they Americanized it a little bit, especially the Germans, you know.
Yeah.
My mom's dad died very young, and her mom remarried eventually, and to a man named, his last name was Emsch. My mom's maiden name was Waxman, but his name was Emsch, E-M-C-H.
Mm-hmm.
And I always joked with the Emsch part of the family. I say, when you got off the boat, they asked you your name, and you didn't speak English, and you just kind of grunted, and they wrote down E-M-C-H.
Yeah,
and that became your name. Who knows what it was?
Yeah, that could have happened. I know for my dad, actually, for his birthday, like, I guess there was, of course, the language barrier, and so they actually wrote down a different date than what he said.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that happens.
It happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's okay. It's fine. We're still alive. We're living.
It's fine. So we got World Youth Day. It's over a year away.
Yeah.
But you need to sign up.
Yeah.
And then we've got
On Fire. On Fire for Youth and Young Adults. That's happening September 17th. It's going to be great. I mean, kind of like last year, we're going to have
Six Flags.
Yep. It'll be at Six Flags in Vallejo.
Yes.
And then there'll be Mass, Adoration, a keynote. We'll have lots of bishops there.
Yeah.
And then vocations table. And then plenty of time for rides and just hang out in fellowship. It's a great place to actually bring your friends and not get them overstimulated with our Catholic faith. Mm-hmm. It'll be like a good teaser for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they have a vocations carnival or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Our vocations office is always there with their stand up images and everything. Yeah. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we'll have confessions throughout the day too, if anyone ever wants to go.
That's good. Are you going to have a cutout of the Pope? People get their picture taken?
I'm not sure if the Pope. But I know, I think we have a cut-up of Bishop Soto.
Bishop Soto, that'd be great.
I think so.
You know, 6 or 7 years ago, I forget how long ago it was, I got asked to go to, when Pope Francis visited New York and Philadelphia, Sirius Satellite Radio asked me to come back and anchor some of their radio broadcasts on satellite. And so I went to New York, and then we followed, then the Pope went to Philadelphia, and the check-in for the press, mm-hmm. which was from all over the world, and the makeshift radio studios were in the Philadelphia Convention Center. So when I first got to Philadelphia, you have to go get your credential, your lanyards, all that stuff to get you past the police and all that.
The security and all that. Yeah.
And so right at the check-in, there's a cutout of the Pope. So I go over there, I take out my cell phone, I hand it to the people at the desk, says, let me take our picture. I send it to my wife. She puts it on Facebook, and 99% of the people responding thought I had just met the Pope. Yeah.
That is hilarious, actually. That's really funny. Man. Oh, that's something.
Yeah, it was interesting too, because people would line the streets for like 3 days, where because he was going to say mass at the at the Ben Franklin Parkway, which is like a huge grassy long area, know, and people would line up on both sides of that street for about 3 days, and it was hard to even get across the street. You had to go through all the security mm-hmm. to get to where the convention center, and then they were sending the press ahead of the Pope on buses, and so we went through security. I mean, literally weapon sniffing dogs, you know, everything to get on the bus, and you know, so I'm on the bus, and I'm sitting in the window, and you know, you're just sitting there, and there were a lot of priests and people are. People are waving at the bus because they're sure the Pope's on there, you know. And so we're all sitting in the window giving our blessing, you know. I saw the Pope. I saw the Pope. He looks different than I thought, but I saw the Pope.
So no, that's hilarious.
Give them what they want, you know.
Yeah. Satisfy their need, their desire, their longing. Yeah, that's hilarious.
I think the Pope was probably in the trunk of some unmarked car, you know.
Taking a whole different route
exactly,
and everything.
Exactly.
You guys were just the distraction. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to World Youth Day and being able to see him just drive around. I can't expect to be able to, but that'll be great to experience that.
Oh, yeah. You never know.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, I think it was Father Brian Atienza. He's been to a couple of World Youth Days.
Yeah, actually.
And he's been gloating that he's been able to see them. Yeah, or at least seen them.
Yeah.
Like drive by. And so we actually have him for World Youth Day. And so hopefully if I stand next to him, I'll be able to see the Pope pass by.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, no, thank you.
Thanks for all the great work you do. And we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Jennifer, for your wonderful introduction. Jennifer does Camp Pendola this summer, and you know they missed the last couple of summers because of COVID. And by golly, she's back directing camp up in the foothills of Yuba County, and they still have some openings for sessions throughout the summer. So go to pendola.org, P-E-N-D-O-L-A, Pendola. org. Well, the Bishop Soto has a wonderful column in the Catholic Herald, which is about to come out, but we have a sort of an advanced copy of it about the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, the Eucharistic revival getting a kickoff on Corpus Christi Sunday, June the 19th. And, this is the start of something great. The title of his column is The Real Presence of Jesus in the Eucharist invites us to be truly present to him. And then in italics, he says, the priest is one, this is from Monsignor James O'Reilly in 1977, the priest is one to whom people come at those junctions of life when they come face to face with the unsolvable, those moments when they meet with the limits of creaturely power, when they experience darkness or have intimations of mortality. At such moments, people have need to draw near to one who, while able like other men and women to swim in the waters of life and stay afloat in them, is not averse to drowning graciously in them, able to be overcome. People need one who has entered deeply into the paschal mystery of Jesus, rejoicing in life, but at ease with death. Those are from Monsignor James O'Reilly in 1977. Bishop Soto, the ninth bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Sacramento, writes, this definition of the priest was developed by the Reverend Monsignor James O'Reilly. He served as a priest in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, born on November 11, 1916, in Galway City, Ireland. He died on April 10, 1978, while taking his morning stroll around the campus of St. John Seminary in Camarillo, California. I never had the good fortune of taking a class from him. I was studying philosophy in the college, part of the same seminary campus, while Monsignor O'Reilly taught mostly theology students. I remember the many stories told about him, the most memorable tidbit was a paraphrased extraction from his definition of priesthood. A priest should be able to drown with people. I had heard this line many times in various forms. It was one of those insights that got me thinking. Another quote of Monsignor O'Reilly that I often recall was, the Mass is intentionally boring so that it can bore into your heart. I'll leave that quote for another article. Bishop Soto goes on to say, the idea that a priest should be able to drown with people stuck with me throughout the seminary. The tested wisdom of this venerable seminary professor was not clear to me until after ordination, when the many who faced the unsolvable came to me. I quickly learned there were numerous circumstances and situations for which no pat answer or remedy was available, except the poor, meager attempt to imitate the Good Shepherd who said, I am with you always until the end of the ages. I learned the poverty of presence has a richness all its own. Presence is a treasure for which many search, and few are willing to give. Standing at a hospital bedside, speaking through a plexiglass window in a prison, listening to a disoriented homeless person on the sidewalk, lending an ear to a penitent's litany of burdens can leave one speechless, unable to find the words or the means to help. Sometimes the temptation arises to elude such encounters when there is little or nothing to say or do, to linger and listen, to stand and wait, to stay with the silent suffering of another offers more than we may imagine. For many of us, the ability to give something, do something, or say something may often become a way to avoid having to be present. Such means may be used as a way to put distance between us and someone who is drowning in sorrow or broken in spirit. We let something else take our place to get between us and them. Having nothing to offer becomes the justification to walk away. But Bishop Soto adds, the act of presence is a gift all its own. The giver is the gift of companionship. Our presence sends to the other person the message that one is not alone, especially in those unsolvable moments when there are intimations of mortality. The willingness to accompany another person in those dark moments may not solve a problem or provide a remedy. Still, personal presence can be an amazing grace. There's a bit more. I urge you, when the Catholic Herald comes, to read the conclusion to that. But we are out of time. He concludes with, Monsignor O'Reilly's insight taught me an important lesson about the priesthood. His wisdom coaxed me into many encounters where others faced uncertainty and despair. These occasions asked me to accompany another on their road to Calvary. Such moments were journeys of faith, relying only on the undying charity of the One, with a capital O, the one whose presence waits for us on the cross. Remain in me as I remain in you. You know, we had a chance to sit down with Bishop Emeritus William Wiegand the other day, and we're bringing you that interview now. And this is the Bishop's Hour, and now we're going to talk with the founder of the Bishop Hour, Bishop Emeritus William Wiegand, joins us by phone. Bishop, always good to hear your voice.
Bob, I'm very happy to be with you again and all of our listeners. It's a privilege.
Oh, thank you, Bishop. It was, believe it or not, 23 years ago when you decided it was time to have a radio show here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And we were all wondering about a daily show, and by golly, here we are 23 years later.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I'm not sure we would have fared so well had we not come upon you and induced you to take over the production of the Bishop's Hour.
Well, thank you for that. It's been a complete labor of love. Every day is a new adventure and a new joy.
And the time goes by very fast. I hadn't stopped to calculate the years, but I knew it was over 20.
Yeah, yeah. How did that come about that the diocese even decided to have a radio show?
Well, we you know, before Catholic Radio came on the line in Sacramento, we had been concerned about getting involved in the media more, reaching more of our people, and people far off also, for that matter. And one of our hopes would be that the local church, the bishop and staff, leaders of different pastoral programs, would have a chance to talk directly to the people that way, and to explain some of our outreach programs, keep people in the loop, what's going on in the diocese. Remember, we cover 20 counties.
Right.
Large counties in Northern California, all the way up to the Oregon border and east to the Nevada border.
Right.
So we have a lot of people who are not that connected to the Sacramento area, put
right.
it that way. And we had a Catholic newspaper at the time, of course. That helped. But the radio was another way that we thought we could reach people.
Well, it was a great idea, and Catholic radio has really exploded across the country.
It has, hasn't it? In the past, the same number of years.
Yeah, same number of years, really. Yeah.
Yeah, no question. In a way, we got into it a bit late, kind of slow. But we learned,
yes.
and expanded, subsequently, of course, we got into a Catholic radio in Spanish
right.
also, and that's a huge clientele often of people that listen to the radio perhaps more than others.
Right. It's a huge hit, the Spanish language radio. It really is. That was a stroke of genius. It was very...
Anyway, with the Bishop's Hour, we wanted Catholic programming,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't want simply, I want to say, anonymous Catholic program.
Right, right.
Or national Catholic program. We wanted to be able to bring the local scene into the equation and to connect with our own people.
Yeah, I think that's been a real key to the success of the Bishop's Hour, is that it is very local. We bring on local guests. We talk about local events, and it helps in one of many other ways to help unite the diocese. Like you say, it's a very big diocese. And to hear you're hearing your pastor, you're hearing the head of a ministry in your church on, or maybe there's a workshop going to happen down the road. I think it's really helpful to have that local element.
And I, you can correct me perhaps, but I think we were the first to develop this mechanism of a bishop's hour.
Yes.
And we had trouble, perhaps you recall, in launching it because we were dealing with, at that time, Immaculate Heart Radio.
Right.
Which was programming almost, if not exclusively, from EWTN.
That's correct.
And they weren't sure that was doable to cut into the normal programming and to cut out an hour each day for local stuff. And it seemed complicated, and we had to kind of push hard on that to get it across. And once we did, of course, the leaders of that network were very happy with it because it made the Immaculate Heart Radio all the more desirable for many of our people.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, they've started. They're probably not named the same as the Bishop's Hour, but similar programs in other dioceses where they have the radio. So, yeah, it was a great idea. It was an absolute great idea because you're right. Till that time, everything was just national programming, which certainly has its place. But it's great to have that. It's kind of like a newspaper. You know, the Sacramento Bee couldn't survive if they didn't have Sacramento News in there. You know.
And exactly. And we also helped spread the idea of cutting out a section for local Catholic programming because as Catholic radio expanded to other states and dioceses, bishops of those areas who weren't all that sold, perhaps, contacted on my watch, contacted me personally to get my opinion of how valuable it was and how we made it connect with the local church, and we explained the whole working of the Bishop's Hour. And any bishop I ever talked to thought that was a great idea.
That's great.
And subsequently, I got into Catholic radio and carved out that same option I don't know if it was always an hour, but some local Catholic programming.
Yeah, some of them would do it maybe once a week. Some of them did it more frequently. But they all. I remember going down to Albuquerque to the Diocese of Santa Fe and the Archdiocese of Santa Fe to help them open their. We did a sort of an opening show, you know, for them and met the person that was going to do their local programming and they were very happy about that they were going to have Catholic radio number one and that they were going to have their own local programming number two. So,
right.
And
that, by the way, is Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. Yeah. But we actually, Santa Fe. Yes, you're right. You're right. I didn't get to go there. I ended up we went to Albuquerque, of course, but I always have wanted to go there. What a beautiful town that's supposed to be.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. It's like the difference between people who say Boise and say Boise.
Yeah, that's right.
Bishop Soto, of course, Bishop Wiegand, of course, is from Idaho, and the Diocese of Boise, and they make sure it's spelled with an S and it's pronounced with an S.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So before you came to Sacramento, you were in Salt Lake City. And is it called the Diocese of Salt Lake, even though it covers all of Utah?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And the Catholic population is really growing in Utah.
Yes. I think on my watch, but I was there 13 years, a little over 13, and I think when I got there in 1980, they were counting 60,000 Catholics.
Wow.
And by the time I left, we were well over 100,000.
My goodness.
But a number of years later, I'm not sure what it is now. I haven't checked, but it was up to 300,000.
Wow.
And the largest segment of that growth was in the Hispanic community.
Right.
The Spanish-speaking community in Utah had started growing prior to my arrival, and one of the reasons I got named there was because I had spent 10 years in Latin America. I knew mm-hmm. Spanish, and both the diocesan level and at the nuncio's office understood that Utah needed to gear up and minister to the Hispanics who were coming and was already projected to be coming in great numbers.
Right.
And, of course, that happened. And a part of that happened because of growth in the state and in other regards.
Mm-hmm.
And the workforce in agriculture, of course, but in practically everything, in hotels and restaurants and different levels of infrastructure, depended on lower income employees, and for that period was going to be the Spanish speaking, and of course, that's exactly what happened. Other growth came to Utah and is still coming because of the growth of the state, of industry and
mm-hmm.
research, science, and so forth. And that type of growth is mainly not Hispanic, but it draws leadership-type people, well-educated people from around the country and around the world, and a certain percentage of that growing population are also Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, we've thought for years of, you know, Utah, of course, of the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and yet now it's becoming very, very diverse, and a lot of that is the growth in the Catholic Church, as you say, people coming there for a wide variety of reasons. Utah is one of those states that continues to grow. Not rapidly, but quite dramatically.
It's a little bit like on a lesser level, but a little bit like the southeast.
Yes.
Of our country that, you know, at one time was thought to be mainly Baptist.
Right.
And many of those states are now have a pretty high population mm-hmm. of Catholics. Because of the migration, the migration of industry and, mm-hmm. and research, which brought people, of course, from the Northeast, but from all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading not that long ago where Tennessee, I believe, was the lowest. It was about 2% Catholic, and now it's probably two or three times that. And some of the rest of the Sun Belt, it's even dramatically higher.
Well, and I'm thinking of state of Georgia.
Georgia, yeah.
A city of Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta forever wasn't considered to have much of a Catholic population.
Right.
But it sure does now, and a huge population.
Yeah, it's a dramatic change, and even, you know, even Dallas and Houston and Texas have you know. A substantial increase in the Catholic population. It's amazing. And you're right. People are coming from other places there. And of course, the church continues to grow right here in California.
It does. And I think California has been growing forever.
Yes.
And, you get a slight a blip. I guess we had one the past year or two where supposedly we had slightly more people leaving the state than entering.
Right.
But the general trend has always been upward. And again, because of the type of people arriving in the state for the lower paying jobs, that supports the whole network, of course. A very high percentage of those have been Catholic, and especially Hispanic, but a good number also Vietnamese, for example, and in more recent years, a very significant number of Filipinos.
Right, right. And we have a number of parishes that reflect that, and you see in the Diocese of Sacramento how many different languages we celebrate Mass. And I think in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, it's in the 30s or 40s that the number of languages that they celebrate Mass in. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. And that's constantly a developing or changing situation, because wherever the people of those 40-some languages in L.A. and are, I'm not sure how many in Sacramento anymore, but after the first generation, the people begin to be more more comfortable, or at least the young people.
Mm-hmm.
Are more comfortable with English,
right?
And so the dependence on the language of the homeland becomes less and less important for those people who have been here for a while. But so at that point, they still want some. It's for cultural purposes very often.
Sure.
Because the music is a bit different, and so, for example, we said that we have so many parishes now with large numbers of Filipinos, and most Filipinos have been very comfortable in English forever. Most of our Filipinos moved from the Bay Area, for one thing.
Right, exactly.
Did not come directly from the Philippines. And when I first arrived, we had only one Filipino priest, and no parish that was doing anything in their native language.
Right.
And I remember myself asking different parishes, asking Filipino people if they would like to have some of their worship and sacraments in Tagalog, for example. And typically the answer was no.
Hmm.
But it was not an honest no. In the typical Asian way, that they told me what they thought I wanted to hear. And plus, they in no way wanted to be seen as different. They were trying desperately to conform and to be fully members of the state of California and of our parishes. So they didn't want to be relegated to some kind of an ethnic a cubbyhole. However, after a few years, and we got more Filipino clergy, the people themselves lost the fear of asking for a little bit in their native culture, and they got to the point where they realized it wasn't going to relegate them to some second class category.
Right.
So from then on, there would be little in the Sunday a mass, for example, mainly in English, with a large the Filipino population. There'd be one or two of the hymns might be in Tagalog.
Right.
Or typically, kind of a bilingual English Tagalog.
Right.
So that it didn't close out English-speaking people either. And they felt that it was okay by then to also celebrate some of their typical feast days.
Yes, yeah.
And
I've attended some of those.
Exactly. And that's important for their history and their background and their sense of who they are and where they come from, to retain elements of their traditional culture and language. And the church has long understood that and has generally tried to accommodate that, which is what I was trying to do way back 28 years ago when I first came and would ask some of the Filipino people if they wouldn't like to have some things in their language. Again, as the bishop of the church, I had a sense that would be important for them. But it took a while for them to feel comfortable to do that and to ask for that sort of accommodation.
Yeah, and now we have a number of Filipino priests, one in my home parish in St. James in Davis, and I don't know if we could have the priest seminarian basketball game next Tuesday if it wasn't for our Filipino priests, because there are a lot of them who play basketball.
Oh yeah, they love basketball, yeah. and I think we would not have that game. In fact, we did not have it prior to having a good number of Filipino priests
and
seminarians. So,
yeah. Well, Bishop, we're as always on a one-hour show. We're against the clock here, but it is always good to hear your voice. And I hope you've got a great vacation planned this summer.
Well, I don't plan too far ahead, but I'm gonna miss the seminary and priest basketball game next week because I'm taking my camper over and spending a few days on the coast.
Oh, very good.
So that's next week. What I do next month, we'll see.
We'll see
how things go.
Well, it is
at age 85. My predecessor, Bishop Quinn, used to say, you don't buy green bananas. you don't assume too much that you're going to be around for things to ripen, huh? So you don't plan too far in advance.
That's right. You drink minute orange juice.
So it's a delight, Bob, to be with you, and I do pray for all of our listeners and for all of our people, and I will continue to do that. That's something that I can still do, to pray for the needs of the church and of the world.
Well, your prayers mean an awful lot to us, and be assured that we are all praying with and for you as well.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bishop. God bless. That's Bishop William Wiegand. And
sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls,